Welcome to Action Phase. I'm your host, Tegan Karuna. That's right, I have a new name. I got married. So now, I'm Tegan Karuna. Though, I'm sure if you still call me Tegan Keating, I will respond probably for the rest of my life. It's weird changing your name. Especially, like, once you've been an adult with your name, you'd, like, get established with it, but whatever. So yeah, Tegan Karuna. It's great. Sorry that I haven't been podcasting as much as I would like. Things have been a little bit crazy with the whole getting married thing, the graduating from grad school thing, the getting the job, going back and forth to the job. It's in Maryland. I still live in Philly. It's very busy. So, but I'm back. 2015 is gonna be it. There will be lots more podcasts. I've got tons of new ideas, different formats, different topics. It's gonna be a little different than it used to be. It used to be real heavy on the interviews. I don't know if that's how it's gonna look, but you'll have to keep tuning in, subscribing on iTunes to find out what it's gonna be like, because it's gonna be awesome. But this week, because I know that you missed me, it's just me, all by my lonesome, and we're talking about codependency. That's right. January is National Codependency Awareness Month. So in the past, I've been pretty open with you about being in therapy myself, and one of the terms that comes up often in therapy, like I would imagine for just about anybody, somebody at some point is going to talk about codependency. And I felt like I kind of had like a good idea of what codependency was or is. But when I realized that it was Codependency Awareness Month, I realized that there's probably a lot more that I could learn. And if I didn't know it, there's at least one other person out there who also doesn't really know what codependency is. And so I figured, hey, I'm doing all this research, learning about stuff for myself, may as well share it on the podcast. So that's how I got here. That's how we ended up talking about codependency this week. So hope you're ready. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be lots of fun. Hopefully you're going to learn something. So here we go. Codependency. So first things first, like any good explanation of something starts with, we're going to start with the definition. It was actually really hard to find like a solid definition of codependency. There was lots of lists of symptoms. So I was able to find this website written by a psychotherapist whose name is Ross Rosenberg. His website is unfortunately called humanmagnetsyndrome.com, which is a super cheesy name. It's the name of his book. It's a better book title than it is a website title. But it makes a lot of sense once you hear, like once we go through all of the history of codependency, or of the term codependency, and the symptoms and all that stuff, it kind of makes more sense, the human magnet. But anyhow, this is not a podcast about humanmagnetsyndrome.com. It's just where I'm getting this information. So I'm going to quote directly from his website. I did make one change. Ross Rosenberg tends to use codependent as a noun. So like, instead of using codependent as an adjective, like as a way of describing a person, he uses it as the word that is the person. So it's kind of like saying, I think I probably talked about this in the eating disorders podcast, is that instead of saying like, oh yeah, that anorexic over there, you should say, oh yeah, that person with anorexia, because the person is separate from the disease, right? Like the disease and the person are not the same thing. Same with codependency, right? So you're not, I could say like, oh yeah, that codependent over there, yeah, she's like really, really in it with her loved one. But that's not really fair, because she, this hypothetical person that I've just made up, is so much more than a codependent, right? She's a person who is codependent, who has codependent behaviors, but she is a human being, is separate. Anyhow, get off my little mental health stigma soapbox there for a second. So to that end, I have changed a little bit of the wording where he had written codependent as a noun, I changed it to people who are codependent. That's all. Little change, just power of words. There it is. Okay. Here we go. So, quote, codependency is a problematic relationship orientation that involves the relinquishing of power and control to individuals who are either addicted or who are pathologically narcissistic. People who are codependent are habitually attracted to people who either seem, who neither seem interested nor motivated to participate in mutual or reciprocal relationships. Hence, the partners of people who are codependent are often egotistical, self-centered, or selfish. Typically, people who are codependent feel unfulfilled, disrespected, and undervalued by their relationship partner. As much as they resent and complain about the inequity in their relationships, codependents feel powerless to change them. End quote. All right, so that's a pretty concise definition of codependent. It is by no means canon, right? It's not. From what I can find, codependency is not in the DSM-5, so I don't know if there is like a codified definition of codependency. This was the best one that I found. If you've got a better one, let me know and I will add it. I will go back in, I will re-record the podcast. Well, not the whole thing. I'll just record something new and I'll pop it in there and then all will be right with the world. So as always, just, you know, let me know. If you know more about something than I do, I want to hear about it because I like learning. But anyway, the point is that that you have this unhealthy relationship. It is a relationship style. Russ Rosenberg says that it's a relationship orientation, which is interesting. It means that you are oriented towards this kind of relationship. You can't really be codependent in a vacuum. It's also important to remember that like relationship in this context doesn't necessarily mean a romantic relationship. It could be like a parent child. Either the parent is an addict and or a narcissist and the child is codependent, or vice versa, you have an addicted or narcissistic child and the parent is codependent. It's easy to see how those relationships can kind of flip-flop. Could also be like siblings or cousins or maybe like your best friend or, you know, any other kind of close relationship. You can have grandparents and grandchildren and all of that kind of stuff. So just keep in mind that although the word relationship generally means or is generally thought to mean romantic, that is not necessarily what it means in this context. And we just kind of gotta broaden our way of thinking about things. So the history of codependency is tied up in the history of alcoholism, and namely the change in understanding from alcoholism as like a moral character flaw to a disease that the person doesn't have a lot of control over, and that whole idea. Really coalesced in 1936 when Alcoholics Anonymous was formed. You know, great, great organization, helps tons of people live happy, healthy, sober lives. Great 12-step programs. They're awesome for lots and lots of people. So awesome that Al-Anon, which is the counterpart to Alcoholics Anonymous for the families and friends of alcoholics. Interestingly, and not totally unexpectedly, the wife of one of the founders of AA was the founder of Al-Anon. There's also Al-Ateen, which is support for teenagers who also have alcoholics in their lives. It's cool because they can like talk about teenager stuff. They have unique needs. They got teenager problems. Totally different than adult problems. Gotta have a place to talk about it. Anyhow. So this also kind of showed this changing understanding of alcoholism. Al-Anon started in 1951, so about 15 years after AA. It shows that people were starting to understand that alcoholism doesn't only affect the alcoholic, the person with the addiction. It affects everybody around them, particularly their family and their close friends and people who, you know, watch a person suffer and hurt themselves, and that's really painful. So this is all kind of like we're starting to think about alcoholism like this. In the 70s, so about 20 years later, treatment centers had started to integrate families into, addiction treatment centers started integrating family members into a person's treatment. In some cases, depending on the type of relationship, family members were often called co-alcoholics, which is not a term that we hear a ton of anymore. But that term came to be because the alcoholism was as much a part of their lives as it was the person who was in treatment. They weren't necessarily an alcoholic themselves, but it was as big of a problem for them as it was for the person who was in the treatment. So that's where you get the term co-alcoholic. In the 1980s, kind of switched over still use the term alcoholism, still use the terms drug addiction, but in the 80s there started to be a movement towards calling it chemical dependency because they were starting to realize that there wasn't that much difference between alcoholism and drug addiction in terms of like how you treat it and what it does to the body and all that kind of stuff. I mean, okay, let me be clear. Alcoholism and drug abuse all have different effects on the body, but the process of addiction is similar. So that meant that this old term of co-alcoholic had to be changed to, if you were not going to call it alcoholism anymore, you were going to call it chemical dependence. You had to call a person who was formerly known as a co-alcoholic to a person who was co-chemically dependent, which is awful to say. It's a lot of syllables. So quickly got shortened to codependent, which is what we use today. So at first, codependent described a person's compulsion to be in relationships with partners who were chemically dependent. But quickly changed into being the term for a person who enables the destructive behavior of a person who's chemically dependent. By the mid-80s, that also was expanded to include a person who enables the destructive behavior of a narcissist. And that's another misunderstood term that maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll talk about that next week. Narcissism is really interesting. Anyhow. So then pop culture got a hold of it and the meaning totally changed. Now, when someone says the word codependent, we think of it as a way to describe a person who's like really clingy and emotionally needy, or how we describe a relationship where the two people are like totally entwined with each other. They're both equally dependent on the other. I remember, like, codependent was a term that we used a lot, like, in middle school and high school when, like, a boyfriend-girlfriend were, like, really in love with each other and never went anywhere alone and all that kind of stuff. It's not really what codependent means. I wish that I knew what the word for that was. Maybe it's just, like, immature romantic relationships? I don't know. All right, so what are some of the symptoms of codependency? And like I said before, as best I know, the DSM-5 does not include codependent as a psychiatric diagnosis. Again, if you know that to be different, let me know, and I'm happy to make changes. So I found this list of symptoms on psychcentral.com, which tends to be a reliable source of psychological information. So I'll just go quickly through the symptoms, and it's important to remember that you might think that these symptoms apply to you. There's the only way to know if they apply to you is to go see a professional. So if something about this kind of triggers something in you and you're like, oh my gosh, like I do all of these things, I have this kind of relationship with this person in my life, then that's when it's time to go to a professional and say, I think that I might be codependent. You're not going to self-diagnose, and I'm certainly not going to do anything because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a social worker, I don't have any mental health training except for mental health first aid. That's it. I'm just learning stuff and talking about it with you, not a professional mental health provider. So if you hear this stuff and you think, oh man, I could totally maybe be this kind of person, go find a professional. We'll talk about resources at the end. And hopefully, if you're concerned that this is something that you may be experiencing in your life, you'll be able to use those resources wisely for yourself. So, this is a list of symptoms for a person to be considered codependent. They don't have to have all of these symptoms. It's generally some kind of mix based on lots of varying factors. Speaking of that, because I'm not a professional, I didn't want to speak to what causes codependency, because I don't have formal training in the roots of mental illness. But the research that I found did say that it generally has its roots in some kind of familial dysfunction. Not always. Sometimes it's based, sometimes it comes from trauma or, any kind of event that could cause you to lose your sense of self. Again, not a professional. It's just me weighing in. So, all right. First symptom, low self-esteem. This is when you think that you're not good enough and you compare yourself to others and think that you don't measure up. Sometimes people pretend like they have good self-esteem and really they're just hiding their negative feelings about themselves. It's often accompanied with guilt and perfectionism. Because if everything is perfect and everybody is all smiley and happy and shiny, then nothing could possibly be bad, right? Wrong. That's not real. The next symptom is people-pleasing. So, this is not your normal, like, oh, you're my best friend and it's your birthday, so I brought you this cupcake and these balloons. Happy birthday! And then your best friend is really happy. No. We're talking about when saying no causes you extreme anxiety, where you just can't say no, either to the person who you have this codependent relationship with, or to anybody. So, like, think about people who, despite being tired, still go out with their friends every time. And in addition to that, they say yes to taking on extra work at work. So they're like working 12 hours, constantly going out, constantly like volunteering or, doing projects or whatever it is, can't say no. So you're just like going and going and going and going, because if you said no, then you would be paying attention to your own needs when that's something that's scary to somebody who is codependent. They really want to accommodate other people, and their needs come second or third or fourth. Another symptom is poor boundaries. So boundaries are a big thing in in addiction treatment and recovery, and in the treatment and recovery for people who have loved ones who are addicted. So a boundary is kind of like, it's a way for you to say, like, this is me, this is what I need, and these are the things that I need in my life so that I can feel safe. A person who has a codependent relationship just doesn't have those boundaries. They just don't know how to separate their needs from the needs of the other person. Sometimes a codependent person will have really strong boundaries and they like close themselves off from everybody. Everybody, I would imagine, it doesn't say this, but it would follow to me that you would close yourself off to everybody else except the person who you have this relationship with. The kind of like natural progression of having poor boundaries is reactivity. So this is where you react to everyone's thoughts and feelings. You totally absorb what other people say, you take it as truth, or you totally become defensive and are like, no, that is not what's going on. When you don't have boundaries, you have a harder time realizing that something that somebody says is just their opinion. It's not a reflection on you, and you don't have to get upset when you're having a disagreement. So another result of having poor boundaries is that, like, you have this overwhelming desire to take care of people. So caretaking is one of the symptoms. It's when you put other people ahead of yourself all of the time. So, like, rather than taking care of yourself, rather than saying, like, you know what, today I'm just going to take a little me time, I'm going to get myself a massage, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to do whatever it is that, you know, that helps you feel fulfilled. Rather than doing that, you're like, oh, I have to do this and this and this and this for this person, because if I don't, then they won't do it for themselves, and I don't want them to, you know, not have the things that they want or the things that they need, and I'm just worried, and I just want to take care of them because they need my help. That's kind of the thought process behind the caretaking. So that, you know, that's a really good way to kind of lose you don't have the boundaries there, so you don't have like a good sense of like what you need to take care of yourself, and who you are as a person outside of the relationship that you are having these kind of caretaking behaviors as part of. Another symptom is control. So sometimes, like, basically you want to feel safe and secure, and like you need control because everybody needs control over aspects of their life. So sometimes people will like go to the total other extreme, right? So they become like workaholics, or they develop their own drug addiction, or they become shopaholics or gamblers, or, you know, whatever it is, like whatever it is that you need to try to feel some sense of control. So they also like really want to control the other people around them because they have a very specific way of thinking that other people should act. Right? So they have like an idea of what it means to be a good person. And generally that means having no boundaries and doing whatever it takes to take care of whoever needs help, particularly the person who you have this relationship with. And they kind of try to manipulate people sometimes, or some people try to manipulate other people to behave in the way that the person who is in the codependent relationship thinks that they should. It's really easy to use like your people pleasing and your caretaking tendencies to do that. So also they may just be really bossy and try to tell you what to do and try to tell you how to live your life. And that's not super healthy for the person that the codependent person is trying to change. And it's not healthy for the person who's trying to make you change, because really, they should just butt out. There's also dysfunctional communication problems where you just don't have a good way of communicating what you need and what you think. So instead of saying, like, I don't like that, or don't do that, you just, like, pretend that it's okay, and you pretend that, like, you're cool with everything, and nothing's wrong, and I don't have any thoughts about this. And that's not true. You do have thoughts about it, and things do hurt you, and you just pretend like they don't. There's also the tendency towards having obsessions. So this often manifests in times when the person with codependency thinks that they've made some kind of mistake. And you just, like, go over and over and over it in your mind. This is really closely linked with denial, which is when you think that the problem is someone else or it's the situation, but, like, you don't have anything to do with it. This is something that is happening to you, not that you were part of. So this can manifest sometimes by just, like, complaining a lot or trying to fix the person, or, like, moving from relationship to relationship where you have a codependent relationship, and then you're like, oh, screw it, I'm out of here. And then you just find yourself in another codependent relationship, and then another one, and then another one. People with codependency sometimes seem needy, but then they pretend like they don't need help. And they definitely won't ask for help. And when somebody tries to help them, then they have trouble taking it. Because, like, they don't need it. They don't have a problem. They don't need help. There's also a lot of dependency, which, I mean, it's called codependency, but just kind of to reiterate it, that you know, some people are really afraid of being rejected or abandoned. People who are in codependent relationships just need other people to like them. So it really fits in with the other traits, the caretaking, the people-pleasing, all of that kind of stuff. They often have problems with intimacy, which doesn't necessarily have to do with sex, but it can. It's more about being, like, open with another person. So, like, showing a person, like, who you really are. That can be really scary, because if you don't have clear boundaries, you might worry that someone's going to judge you or reject you. And because you don't have a great sense of the fact that, like, other people's thoughts are their thoughts and they're not necessarily truth, that can be really scary. You also might be worried about, like, being totally smothered by somebody. And you might think that, like, you don't really want to be close to anybody. So there's a lot of opportunity for problems with getting close to other people. And then finally, there are painful emotions. This is, like, when you feel a lot of shame and you feel low self-esteem and you're worried about being judged or left or rejected or making mistakes or being a failure or being trapped by being close or being trapped by being alone. You very reasonably are going to feel anger, depression, resentment, hopelessness, despair, all those negative emotions that, like, when that becomes to be too much, then you start to feel numb. You don't feel anything because you're totally overwhelmed by all the feelings. And that, again, is, like, in my mind, I don't have the psychological training to know, but that seems like it would be like a defense mechanism. Like, you're just, like, everything is too much, so your brain just doesn't feel anything anymore. Obviously, this is really, really tough stuff. Like, if a person is in a codependent relationship, it's really hard to admit that, like, there is a problem, and that you are part of the problem, and that you need help. Somebody else needs to help you fix it. It's a really, really hard thing to admit. So there's lots of options for help. The first one that I found is called CODA, which is Codependence Anonymous. And that makes total sense, right? Like, that totally makes sense that there would be a 12-step program specifically for people who are in codependent relationships, because the idea of codependency comes out of that 12-step, out of the acknowledgement of how other people's problems can become your problems. That all comes out of the 12-step programs. So you can find them online at coda.org, coda.org. It looks like, to me, like they have a lot of online support too, which is super cool. Because not everybody lives or has, you know, the schedule to go to meetings. But maybe you find somebody online who can talk to you. The other thing, and like, you know me, I'm always advocating for more counseling, therapy. You should go if you're concerned at all. One-on-one therapy or group therapy is definitely helpful for a lot of people in this situation. In fact, like, if you were just listening to that list of symptoms and you're like, oh my god, this is totally me, finding a therapist, finding a group, or, you know, finding a Codependence Anonymous group, like, that's how you're gonna get some answers and some peace in your life. There are plenty of books out there, and like, books are great. They're great to like learn more about something, but reading a book is not a substitute for getting help and support from somebody who is trained and who understands the complexities of the problem. However, like, reading books, I have so many books that I've purchased that I read just to like learn more about something, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I've like satisfied my knowledge that this is not something that is part of my life, or not something that I want to adopt as part of my life, if it's like self-help or whatever. So, you know, again, if you were listening to this and you think like, man, that sounds really familiar, there are resources out there. I highly suggest coda.org, or looking for a therapist. And if cost is a problem, there are lots of low-cost therapists out there, generally associated with a university in your area, who can, you know, help you out for a very low fee. It's definitely an option. So that's about all I got on codependency. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I am really looking forward to being back with you again next week. Maybe I'll talk about narcissism, if I can practice saying it clearly. Maybe I'll have a guest. I don't know. You'll have to tune back in, see what it's like. So that's all. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back with you soon. Thanks for listening to Action Phase. You can find me, Tegan Karuna, on my website, tegank.com, on Twitter, at TeganMPH, and on LinkedIn, just search for me. You can find Action Phase Podcast at actionphasepodcast.com, and on Twitter, at actionphasepod. Action Phase is a proud member of the Philadelphia Podcasting Society. Thanks, and I'll be back again with you soon.